Vedaki, Tulasi Vedaki, Samavetata Bhakti Vrindaki, Jayata Gauda Vrindaki, all glories to your Samavetas, all glories to your Samavetas, all glories to your Samavetas, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauda, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tribhyam Arvitatmana Brahmanam Pratyahud Brahman Matsara Manyur Vedacha Abhutapurvasahasa Shutribhyam Aridatmana Brahmanam Pratyabhut Brahman Matsaro Manyure Vacha Abhutapurvasahasa Shutribhyam Arvidatmana Brahmanam Pratyabhut Brahman Matsaro Manyure Vacha Adbhutapurvasahasa Shutribhyam Arvidatmana Brahmanam Pratyabhut Brahman Matsaro Manyure Vacha
Thank you.
Abhutapurva.
Abhutapurva.
Unprecedented.
Unprecedented.
Sahasa.
Sahasa.
Circumstantially.
Circumstantially.
Shrut. Hunger.
Hunger.
Tribhyam.
Tribhyam.
As well as by thirst.
As well as by thirst.
Arvita.
Arvita.
Being distressed.
Atmana,
Atmana, of his self. Brahmanam,
Brahmanam,
unto a Brahmana. Prati,
against.
Adbhut,
Adbhut,
became.
Brahman,
Brahman,
O
Brahmanas.
Matsara,
Matsara,
envious.
Manyu,
Manyu,
angry.
Angry.
Eva,
Eva,
us,
cha,
cha,
and.
Translation. O Brahmanas, the king's anger and envy directed towards the Brahmana sage were unprecedented, being that circumstances had made him hungry and thirsty. Purport. For a king like Maharaj Parikit to become angry and envious, especially at a sage and Brahmana, was undoubtedly unprecedented. The king knew well that Brahmanas, sages, children, women, and old men are always beyond the jurisdiction of punishment. Similarly, the king, even though he commits a great mistake, is never to be considered a wrongdoer. But in this case, Maharaj Parikshit became angry and envious at the sage due to his thirst and hunger by the will of the Lord. The king was right to punish his subject for coldly receiving him or neglecting him, but because the culprit was a sage and a brahmana, it was unprecedented. As the Lord is never envious of anyone, so also the Lord's devotee is never envious of anyone. The only justification for Maharaj Pariksit's behavior is that it was ordained by the Lord. So, establishing here the principle that the Lord, he has a hand in whatever's happening. Because in the devotee's life, when someone takes up the chanting of Hare Krishna, then the devotee, the Lord then takes control of things. The devotee's independence is not lost, but the Lord has his hand in whatever is going on. This is important. Otherwise, we're thinking that the Lord has either nothing to do or he's running everything. Why is it we're in Maya? It's the Lord's fault. No, it's our fault. We've decided to be here. We like to be here. Opportunity is there to get out of here. But we don't take it. It's our fault, not his fault. Oh, why didn't he make us so that we wouldn't be in Maya? That's called the internal potency. We're jivas, we're tatasta. We're made differently. Right? It's just the way we're made. Whenever you have day, you have to have night. And if there's day and night, there must be twilight. Right? So there must be the internal potency, so there must be the external potency. And there must be a twilight, which is us. So everything's working perfectly according to how God established it. He established it that we are going to have the opportunity to be absorbed in His service. We can take it, we can not take it. But it doesn't mean He's not involved. So He's, once one takes up any devotional service, the Lord is involved. To that degree we understand, to that degree He is active. To that degree we don't understand, to that degree He's hidden. Right? So that being hidden is actually because of us. We don't want to see, so He's not seen. Right? It's natural. Someone doesn't want to see you, you're not seen. Right? You don't do things that others would not so much appreciate. That's the natural culture. So that comes from Krishna. You don't want to see Him. Okay, you don't see Him. He doesn't have to prove Himself. He doesn't have to prove to you He's God. He is God. So He's not insecure. He doesn't feel that, oh, nobody accepts I'm God, so now he's going to have a crisis. You know how you say it'd be hard to find a midlife crisis with God, but whatever. He doesn't have any of these difficulties of establishing who he is, because he knows who he is. He is self-realized. Right? He knows who he is. Remember, one devotee once was there with Prabhupada and was offering all kinds of nice eulogies. Oh, Prabhupada, you're this, you're that. It wasn't the time for it, you know. It wasn't like a formal situation. I think he was servant and he was just in the room. And then he said, you know, Prabhupada, you're this, you're that, you're so many wonderful things. And Prabhupada just kind of like stopped him cold and says, I know who I am. You know, so now, you know, what about your service? You know, it's like, you do your service, I'll do mine, right? You know? So God knows who he is. So it's only for rasa, relationship, then these opportunities are there to know him, to interact with him like this. So if we don't want to interact, or only how much we want to interact, then he reciprocates. Right? That's there. But it's so nicely done, and it's so different than how we would do it. Therefore, we don't understand that. That's the principle. We don't understand God's involvement in our life. That's the masculine principle. Here you have somebody. They're in the temple all day. Right? All day they're willing to receive, to reciprocate. Whatever is your interaction with them, they're willing to interact. They come in the name, and the pictures, so many ways, books, that we can interact with them. But we only interact when we do. So when we go to the temple, we expect the deities to be smiling. Right? Why? Just because we walked in. Right? They're there all day, but somehow or another they're there just when we're there, when we interact. Whenever we remember them, then the interaction should be wonderful. It should be special. Does that make sense? Meaning from their side. Does that make some sense? So this principle, this only Krishna can do. Right? Krishna and his devotees who are representing. Because otherwise, energy doesn't work like that. Energy, if it's not given attention, gets annoyed. Right? So this is the principle. So this is why we don't understand that Krishna is involved in our life, even though seemingly it's not. It's only when we interact, then he gets involved. When he doesn't interact, he doesn't get involved. He's involved, but we don't see. Does this make some sense? Like that, it's a subtle point, because the tendency is to think, oh, Krishna's not there, Krishna's not involved, but he is involved. Right? That's the point. He is in control of everything, he is running everything, so he is involved. And with devotees, he's conscious of it. Non-devotees, material energy manages it. But for devotees, Krishna himself is personally involved. But the living entities don't understand this, because it's not our nature to be like that. Right? Our nature is we're dependent. We're dependent on Krishna, but he's independent. So he doesn't have to prove himself to us. If you have to prove yourself, that's dependency. That's the funny thing in the material world, right? You have the masculine ego is you have to establish your authority. But if you have to establish your authority, that means you're dependent on the other person to recognize it. That means you're feminine. Does that make sense? This way, that's why the jivas, they make a good show of being masculine or being controllers. Because every jiva in the material world has this purusha bhav, this mood of the male mood that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. But you're still dependent on that others recognize it. If everybody says, the more people that say, yes, you're great, you're wonderful, the better we feel. But God doesn't need that. He already knows he is everything. So he doesn't have to have anyone tell him that he's great to feel confident. For him, expansion of rasa, expansion of the living entities, is just for the interaction of rasa, to increase already the happiness of being confident who he is. He's already satisfied. He's already complete. And it just adds to the completeness, expands the completeness. Does this make sense? So this principle, because of this, because this is where, God, we had a problem with him on this platform. Then next year, the king, all these different things, then we have a platform. It comes right down into our own personal life. Why the other person this, why the other person that, the husband, the wife, the friends, the relative. It's the same principle. We're trying to be male, but we're dependent upon the others. We're actually female. Like that. And so, it's a problem. So the principle is then, if one is in a position where that masculine identity would be manifest as part of duties, then this is how the male is. The male is always there. When interaction happens, they interact, they're happy. When it doesn't happen, it's understood. Fickleness is understood. It's the nature of energy. So that it has to be consistent, constant. That means we're expecting from energy what is there of the male. Does that make sense? So this is the psychological twist that comes from trying to establish yourself as male without actually being female. Right? Because only Krishna is male. He can do that. But you see, therefore, those who are taking the role, the male role, then this is how they function. And the closer they function to this, the more it's appreciated, the more it works. And the less they do, and they take the feminine role, then the more there's difficulty. These are its eternal principles. You can apply it in the broad range. Right? Does this make some sense? Like that? So this happens any time there is. Anytime you're dealing with authority, this is how it works. Right? You're sitting there, the mother's sitting there, she is the authority. It's up to her, the kid would interact all the time. Right? Because she is feminine. But at the same time is, in the role, she is the authority, the child is the junior, is the dependent. So the masculine aspect is there. So that means she'll interact with the kid when the kid's there. Does that make sense? Kid wants to interact, they run over, they interact for 30 seconds, and then their mind goes somewhere else and they're gone. You try to hold them there, and then they just get restless, and then they want to go. And then you feel bad, oh, they want to leave, they don't like me, this. That's because of the feminine. But the reason that that is there is I'm the parent, I'm the authority. You understand? So because of this, then things get messed up. Right? I'm the authority, they should do what I say because I said it. I'm the authority. I don't have to prove it. I don't have to in any way explain it. I don't have to even deserve it, just I'm in the position. But you're dependent upon them to gain it. So you're demanding the male role, the authority, but you're putting them in the masculine position that they have to say you're great. So this is why things become very strange, interactions with people, if these things aren't either gained by association of those who do it naturally, or one gains it by knowledge and practice. So here is the devotee, because they represent the Lord, you don't expect these qualities. For a king to go and not be received by a subject, that's not good. Him being angry, that's normal. It's against the rules. Anybody who doesn't follow their religion, the king can chastise them. So that would generally mean by, gentle admonishment. Like that. If that doesn't work, then you stronger words, just that, until it gets done. But in this situation, then we have a great sage and we have a great king who's a devotee. So therefore it's strange. Like that. Kings getting angry, it happens all the time. Like that. It's recommended. Brahmins be very careful in dealing with kings. They always get angry. Never get between two kings. Right? Because each king wants you on their side. To prove that they're more in control, they're more masculine, so they would take you on to do that. Problem is, both kings want it. You get in the middle, then you become enemies of both. So that's one of the rules of Niti, is never get in between two kings. If two kings are sitting alone and talking, a Brahmin shouldn't walk in. Because guaranteed, as kings, they're going to challenge each other, it's going to be chivalry, and they're going to expect you to take this side. Don't go. So it's understood this is the way it is. The passion is like that. So that's normal. As the king, he had the right. As the king, it's natural. But where it becomes strange is that he was a devotee, and a great devotee. So that wouldn't have happened, because the forgiveness is greater. Because one of the qualities is that of forgiving. The king, then the Brahmins, elders, women, children, all these ones mentioned, if they criticize him or even start a case against him, he shouldn't get upset. Because it's just the way they are. These things happen. So, therefore, he should avoid that. And then, why is that there? Because Krishna is king. He is Indra. So he forgives. The living entity is doing so many things. We've turned away from him and this and that. And then one comes to the material world, one does so many things. Now, one may consider that the things of this world, these are the really bad things. Right? You have the five great sins. Right? You have killing a Brahmin, intoxication, stealing gold of a Brahmin, association, intimate associate with the Brahmin's wife, and associating with those that do these other four. These are the greatest sins you can commit in the material world. So then, we will consider that the great thing, the big thing. But it's all illusory anyway. We are not the person who's stealing the gold. We're not the person it's stolen from. The gold actually doesn't really have any meaning. We all say it has meaning, so we accept it. That comes and goes. This life we do something, next life we're punished, then after that it goes away. Now we're sinful, in the future we become pious, again we become sinful. So it's constantly going, it doesn't have any serious meaning. You know, it's just like kids are playing. Nobody cares. I was actually very surprised. I was with one family with kids, because on many airlines, if you have children, they let them go first, or they sit in a special area, like that. And because you're sitting for like half an hour of that, the kids got up, started dancing, you know, just right there in the, you know, middle of the waiting area, and that dancing, this, that, moving their hands, stomping their feet. I thought people would look, or, you know, I was embarrassed. Nobody even blinked. It wasn't even like they even looked, and kids had looked back. They didn't even get the first glance. It's kids. They do it. Now, if an adult stood up and do that, hey, the whole place would be watching. You know, who is this, a crazy? Or, you know, is this a nice performance? Or, you know, whatever. But they don't even look. Why? Because it's not consistent. Right? Does that make sense? It's not consistent. One morning, moment they're serious, next moment they're playing, next moment they're devotional, next moment they're affectionate, next moment they're off doing something else, next moment they're crazy, next moment they're envious and jealous and fighting with each other and killing each other, next moment they're best of friends. So no one takes it seriously because they're kids. Right? So now if you step back a bit, this is what's going on with us. Right? One moment we're the big person, next moment we're the beggar, next moment we're the, you know, we're nasty, next moment we're good. It may be over lifetimes, but to God we're dealing with eternality, then that's the way it is. So we're kids. It doesn't really mean anything. We're dependents. So he doesn't take it seriously. Right? So the actual serious thing, the real cardinal sin, is turning away from Krishna. Wanting to be the controller and enjoyer rather than the servant. That's the real sin. The other things are secondary. Right? Does that make sense? Once you get into bad association, you do this, you do that, you know, you kill one person, you kill 20 persons, no big deal. it's understood in that association you do bad things. So that's not the point. So it's understood if you turn away from Krishna, it's going to be bad. Right? So that's secondary. The primary is that we think we're the controller and enjoyer. That's the real difficulty. If that's corrected, everything else corrects. Everything else becomes okay. Does that make sense? So Krishna therefore doesn't get disturbed by the living entities, all the nonsense they do. It's because they are relating to him in the universal form as a nonsense, then the universal form reciprocates, right? Krishna says, as you surrender, I reciprocate. As, you know, in you getting back what you deserve. You perform nonsense, you get nonsense back. You're nice, you get nice back. It's normal relationship. I go up to someone, I'm pleasant, they'll be pleasant back. I go up to somebody with an attitude, then I'll get some attitude back. So everything in the world is Krishna's energy. It's a universal form. So you're interacting with his energy. So you go up to his energies properly, they respond properly. You go up with the wrong attitude, they respond in the wrong to that. Does that make sense? So that's what's happening. So for Krishna, then this principle that it's we. So whenever we interact, we'll interact. Okay. So the point we're trying to make is that Krishna doesn't take it seriously. Therefore, he's very forgiving. Just like the adults, mature adults, experienced adults are very forgiving with children. So in the same way, God is with the living entities. In the same way, the devotees are with the living entities. So that nature of forgiveness is natural. It is the masculine principle, that of forgiveness. So in this case, the king, because the Brahmin is his junior, that should have been forgiven on that case. Here, as a citizen. And as a Brahmin, he's to protect. But more important is, as a devotee, that mood of the Lord of forgiveness, that naturally is manifest in such a great personality. So that it's not, that's amazing. So then one would have a doubt, so does that mean there's a fault in the devotee? But no, the devotee has already proven himself. So then we can understand the Lord's hand in the devotee's life, he's arranged this for the benefit of the devotee. Because Samika Rishi is not going to become disturbed. Right? He wakes up, there's a snake there, he takes it off, who cares? Okay, I should have received him, I didn't, he put a snake around me, now, okay, fine, doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything. The respect or the lack of respect doesn't mean anything to someone who is transcendental. And so the sage was so absorbed in transcendence that these dualities don't mean anything to him. So it's not going to bother him. And Maharaj Parikit, he'll feel bad because he's a devotee, but it'll create an opportunity for him to become detached from material engagement. He's doing that engagement to please Krishna, so then Krishna arranges for him to become detached from it, so that he can also continue. Because as a king, he set perfect example, and now as someone who is going to die, he's going to set perfect example. So in this way, then, he becomes very prominent for us in so many ways. Any questions on this? Comments? Does Krishna's masculine principle apply to the spiritual master? It applies to any place where that aspect of relationship is there, because everything that you have is based on male and female. Everything. It means you take this table, the table is female, the platform is male. Right? Because it's the support. This does the activity. Female does the activity. Male is the support of the activity, of the facility for the activity, of the standards for the activity. You know, it sets the jurisdiction. You know what I'm saying? So this is here, so the table is to go on there, so it must go on top of here. And it's this big, so it's only that much. So you set your boundaries. You understand? The same time as the floor is the masculine principle to this, which is feminine. And this table is masculine for the stand. So it's you can't separate them. That's the point. Krishna and his energies are non-different. But for rasa, there's a difference. That's the meaning, simultaneously one and difference. The male-female principle, you can't separate, but at the same time you can. You don't separate it, it's atmarama. You do separate it, then you have rasa. Does that make sense? So whenever there's authority or support that's masculine, what is being supported or what is dependent is feminine. So that always does. So that's why those rules are there. And because it's a very subtle point, then it's documented in the form of rules. Because let us say, okay, the husband is taking the masculine role, and the wife is taking the feminine role. But when it deals with the children, authority over the children, they're both taking the masculine role, and the children are taking the feminine role, even though the children may be masculine. You know what I'm saying? And then that family, the father is masculine, but then he has people that are over him. So in that way, it's dependent. You understand? That's why in these things, like the rules for brahmacharya, the services of a brahmachari, the services of a shudra, and the services of a woman are the same. Because they're dependent on someone else. The student is dependent on the teacher, the wife on the husband, and the shudra on whoever he's assisting. And the devotee, they're also the same for the devotee. Because the devotee is dependent on the Lord. So the Lord is the masculine, the devotee is the feminine. The dwij is the masculine, the shudra is the feminine. You know what I'm saying? The male, the one in the male form is the masculine, one in the female form is the feminine. You know? So it's and then the brahmachari, there, the teacher is male, the brahmachari is male, but it still works in the same thing. So therefore then the rules have to be applied. Okay, how do you apply the masculine principle to a woman who's a mother? Or a woman who's dealing with, let's say, other relatives, junior relatives. At the same time as in this family principle, she has her authorities, her elder women and the men in the family. So you're trying to take it and put it into this and put it into that. That's why it's seemingly so broad, but the Vedic literature is simply trying to get us to understand these principles. Does that make sense? But because there's so much difference, like, the girl, she's a woman, but okay, and she's dependent, but dependent as a mother is dependent on the son is different than dependent on the husband as a wife, is different as dependent on the father as a daughter. Right? Because one you're junior, but you're dependent. One you're equal, but you're dependent. And one you're senior, but you're dependent. So there's a difference in flavor. So then the rules have to be established, because otherwise how do you know how to apply dependency when you're senior? Right? You have the king, and a wrestler, who's a shudra, is coming and teaching him wrestling. Right? Because you learn wrestling from a wrestler. Right? So then, but he's a shudra. Right? And he's the king. At the same time, he's teaching, so he's the teacher, and the king is the student. At the same time as he's the king, and he's his subject. So how do you balance all those? Because if he walks in, he's this area, I'm the teacher, and he teaches him like he would another younger man who's a shudra, he's teaching wrestling, that would be against the etiquette. But at the same time, is he does have the right to tell the king, no, this is wrong, you have to put your hand like this, or your foot like this, or you're off balance. And the king can't get upset, what, you're telling me what to do? No, because he's the teacher. So that's the point, is that Krishna, to get a taste, he's expanded rasa, or relationships, unlimitedly. And in the spiritual world, that acts very well, because everybody, it's Krishna, is the one they're interacting with. So their particular unique love for Krishna then creates the particular form and situation which is expressed in. That culture reflecting here then creates that same variety. But the jiva, because every jiva is trying to be male, being God, therefore it's a problem. The spiritual world works great because there's one God. Right? Even Balaram, who's the expansion, is servant God. So even there's that aspect of Ashraya. Right? So there's only one Krishna. It works. Does that make sense?
Is there conflict between things? If someone's in a relative position where you're supporting someone which is dependent on another, is there a conflict between dependence and support?
Is there a conflict between you're dependent on one person and you're supporting another? These are the things that one has to balance. That's why etiquette is there. Knowledge etiquette is there so that one learns to balance. That's the whole thing. If your life is balanced, it works. Materially, spiritually, anything. It's balance. Because that's what makes it work. You put too much salt or put too little salt, it's wrong. You know, you make a chutney. You have hot, you have sweet, you have sour, and you have salty. You have to balance four contradictory rasas. Salt and sweet is opposite. Right? Like that. You know, sweet and hot is opposite. Sweet and sour is opposite. So you have a lot of contradictory rasas, but if it's done in the right proportion, then it makes a unique preparation, very special. So that's what's happening, is all these relationships, you're creating this uniqueness. So if you understand what you're dealing with, you understand what is the nature of these four tastes and how they can combine. Right? If I'm making a chutney, I'll use the four tastes where the sour will become prominent. Right? But if I'm making a sabji, then the salty aspect will become prominent. Right? I've seen sweets. You get some sweets, they are salty and they got chili in them. But it's sweet, and the others are just added. It's rare. I've only seen it, I think, in Orissa. But they make it sweet like that. You understand what I'm saying? Oh, so, you get these aspects. So, the whole idea is to get that balance. That is the science of Krishna consciousness. Is how to balance, first of all, you know, the material and the spiritual. But within the spiritual, us, who is actually our position? How advanced are we? You know, what is the goal? So our goal is Vrindavan. Therefore, then we'll only use certain elements of the Vaishnav culture. Vaikuntha elements that are not compatible with Vrindavan, we won't use. Does that make sense? So then, like that, so we have to balance all these different things. You know, our understanding where we're going. We have no problem with other Vaishnavas. Because they're going to go wherever they go. We know where we're going. You know, as I pointed out, for us, it's not that ISKCON's the only way you can go back to Godhead. But it's the only way you can go back to Godhead if you want to be in Vrindavan, serving the residents of Vrindavan, headed by Radharani, and standing next to Srila Prabhupada. It's the only way you're going to get that. You can get to Vrindavan. You can be there, you know, serving Radharani, whoever you want, but not standing next to Prabhupada. That's another society. But ISKCON's the only way you're going to be standing next to Prabhupada. Right? And so what he sees, what he knows, is what we want. We want to be there. We don't want to be somewhere else. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Others are going, the Madhvas are going, Shris are going, other Gaudiyas are going. You know, it's not a problem for us. Vallabhas are going. You might bump into them, but they're not your associates. You know, the Vallabhas want to become parents. So there's lots of parents there, you know, we'll bump into them. But that's not our interest. So this is the only way we're going to get that Vrindavan that Prabhupada is offering us. But others are doing that, we're fine. So we're balanced. If we're things that know this is it, everybody else is in my life, then there's something out of balance. Right? Maybe okay and good because it establishes faith, it fixes you so you won't go anywhere else. So it has its advantage. Fanaticism has its advantage in that it maintains one's focus and faith. But if the faith is mature, it doesn't matter. You know, I go to a buffet, I take the things I like. You know, there's 10 things there, I like 2 of them, I take that. I don't have any problem that someone else ate the other 8. I'm not interested. But if I'm not really confident that my 2 preparations are good, then it's like, well, how come he's eating those ones? Or, you know, why do you eat those ones? Or what do you get out of that? Then I'm not confident. Then, of course, naturally the thing. So either it's what he's doing is right, or I'm right. Who's right? No, but it's, why does anybody have to be right? This is what's right for us. This is what's right according to our acharyas. That's what we want, so therefore that's the right path. Does that make sense? So we're not, there's no insecurity. So if you're convinced, then you can balance things. You're okay, I am servant of God. If I'm thinking I'm the controller, there's always a problem with that I have to surrender. Okay, then I'm in the material world, I accept that, then I can work with it. Many devotees can't actually work with their conditioned nature because they won't accept it, they're too proud. I'm a pure devotee, right? So that's a popular thing, must really call it the PD disease, right? The pure devotee disease. They're always a pure devotee, but if you look at their personal life, not at all. But, you know, they're always that, but it's not a problem because the advantage that they'll get from being the pure devotee is so much greater than the loss that's there from who they actually are. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, you let it run. But if they would recognize it, then they would have their pure devotee-ness, plus they would be able to recognize and work with what is their weakness. You know what I'm saying? Then they're balanced. You'll find that person is a nice person. They're comfortable with themselves. If you're not comfortable with yourself, no one else can be. You know? If you're comfortable, everyone else is comfortable. Right? Well, that's what a congenial person is. They're very comfortable with themselves, so they're very comfortable with you, and you're comfortable with them. But if you're not comfortable with yourself, then you're not comfortable with anybody else, or, you know? What is it? There's nothing perfect, right? You have something, it's black. This is black, it's not white. So you could say it's a fault, it's not white. No, but it's black. You know, this is white. Right? This is orange. So, okay, I'm not a great, orator, I'm not a great person, I interact with people, and I'm comfortable with that. So then, what you are good at, you can interact with others, and they'll find you a pleasant person, right? With a tendency, we want to be perfect at everything, and then we're perfect at nothing. Right? If we're just comfortable, it's a common principle. So if we're just balanced, then it works. So that means balance means we recognize. Because balance means we found it, right? It's just like, if you take a stick, how do you balance it? By not looking at the stick? Not recognizing your finger and the stick go together? No, they go together. So you can see the stick, you put your finger in the middle of the stick, you find the balance, it works. So that means when you recognize your nature, then you can balance it. You don't recognize it, you can't balance it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Here, we'll just stop here, and then we'll continue questions after for whoever likes. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jaya Thai Gauru. So what's your question? Hi, Val. What's your question? Huh? No, it means it's finished, but some devotees will stay.
If we satisfy the relationship we have with the
Why would we look for something else? Why did we come to the material world if we're satisfied? Okay. Question, why would we come to the material world if we're satisfied, looking for other relationships? We have nice relationships, why would we? Point is the spiritual world, its position is that of love for Krishna. Does that make sense? In the spiritual world, its position is that one has love for Krishna. One is interacting with Krishna based on affection, and you interact with other devotees based on that same affection. Right? They're devotees of Krishna. Krishna is dear. They're dear to Krishna, so they're dear to you. Right? You have a friend, and they're dear to you. That's natural. But if what is dear to that friend is dear to you, that means it's more intimate. Right? So, that means those who can only relate to Krishna, then that's nice. But those who have more affection for Krishna, who can relate to what's dear to Krishna, in other words, Krishna's devotees, that's better. That means you're more devoted, more, the relationship with Krishna is deeper. Right? That makes sense? Okay. So that's the spiritual world. Tathasta Shakti means its inherent nature is to have love for Krishna, because that's natural. Whatever you are dependent on is where your affections will go, right? Children, it's automatic that they have affection for parents, because they're dependent upon them, right? Just by the creation, it's natural that their affection for the parents goes along with it. Does that make sense? But as soon as they're born, they're not manifesting that affection. It takes time. Right? But it's natural. If the child doesn't develop affection for the parent, one will say that is strange. That's abnormal. To develop attachment to the parents, that's normal. Right? So for the jiva to develop that attachment to Krishna, that's normal. Does that make sense? But it does happen that the living entity becomes distracted by the material energy and decides they want to be God. So then one comes here, and then you spend your time trying to establish your godness by trying to lord it over other living entities and them telling you that you're great. Does that make sense? Yeah.
You said it's natural that jiva have affection for Krishna.
Yeah.
And they're satisfied with that. How they get distracted from that jiva?
Because they are tathasta shakti. Tathasta shakti means that place or that situation or that potency that can put together the spiritual and the material at the same place at the same time, functioning together. That's tathasta shakti. Does that make sense?
Okay, so, but they wouldn't be interested in other relationships with Krishna, but they may sometimes be interested in material.
What's your point? You know what I'm saying?
No,
that I understand. I'm having a doubt on what is your purpose of this question. What are you trying to get to? What are you trying to clarify?
Clarify that you're saying that they're not going to be interested in other relationships with Krishna, right?
But I'm saying what's behind this question. This is a detail. What is the actual point here? What is the doubt?
Doubt?
The doubt has arisen, this given rise to this question. There's a doubt in your mind. And that you asked a question regarding relationships.
Yeah, just doubt. Well, I just try to understand the, you know, how Jiva can
How the material world. Okay, so then, and then what would be the problem with the jiva coming to the material world? What's wrong with that?
What's wrong? I just said that the jiva is satisfied with the relationship
he has with Krishna. Okay, that's, okay, so you're taking it that he has established his relationship with Krishna. But at the beginning of the explanation, we pointed out it is natural for the child to develop the love for the parents. But at the manifestation, it's not.
What is one before it's not?
The living entity... Okay, well here, just, does everybody else understand this? Okay, so we'll... move on. Here. The point is this. The living Krishna is expanding unlimitedly. But all his energies are always present. You know what I'm saying? Means every, the unlimited potencies of Krishna are always there within him. But for Rasa, he expands them from him so that we would consider that they manifest. Just like at every moment, Vaikuntha is expanding, and there's more Vaikuntha planets and more Brahman and more living entities always expanding at every moment. But at the same time, they were always there. Okay? You get it? So, the thing is the living entity, when they manifest, then they're in the realm of the Tathasta Shakti, which means the spiritual world and the material world has to be there simultaneously. They have a natural relationship with Krishna, but they may get distracted by the material energy and not get interested in Krishna. Therefore, they'll come into the material world. If they don't get distracted, they naturally take up the association of the great devotees and develop that love for Krishna, then they leave the Tathasta Shakti and move into the internal potency. There, they have love for Krishna, they're satisfied in that relationship, you can't fall down. But in the Tathasta area, you can fall because you haven't developed prema, and you can see both spiritual and material simultaneously. Yeah? See, the problem is this won't fit into your linear thinking of time and space. So it's basically you either understood it or you drop it and leave it for later. Because if you didn't understand it from what we said now, you're not going to get it. You understand? Because you're dealing with unlimited. It does not fit into our pea brain. We want to say, oh, but you know, it was here in the spiritual world, and then from there you felt, you're taking it all as far as time and place. But we're not talking time and place. Like that. Because if you can't understand that spiritual and material can be in the same place at the same time, you won't understand this. In other words, you don't understand who you are as Tathasta Shakti. So therefore you can't understand it. You understand spiritual, you understand material. So how can there be material in the spiritual world? But that's what Tathasta Shakti is. That would be like, how can there be twilight? But black and white have to meet at some point, and that's called gray. Everything has a junction. There's nothing that doesn't, right? The ceiling meets the floor, and there's that little skirting. There's always a junction. So we are that junction. That's who we are. We're not internal potency. We don't only have love for Krishna. That's our natural position, but we can become distracted because we are the twilight. The natural position of the twilight is to be connected with prema. Right? Because it's unnatural for us to be absorbed in the material energy. Because material energy is dead matter. We're not dead matter. We're spiritual. Yes? So that's the point. These pastimes here, where Krishna's in Vrindavan, here in the 10th canto, is that the spiritual world or not?
Yes.
Yes or no? Yes. Okay. So did the Nakasura come walking into Vrindavan? Was he spiritual or material? Okay, so that's the Tathasta Shakti. It brings the spiritual world and the material world together in the same place at the same time. The problem is your idea of spiritual is only exclusively Goloka Vrindavan. And no one falls from there. But in Gokul Vrindavan, you can fall, because both spiritual and material are there. Okay, we'll end that discussion. Do you have something? Question is that, let us say we have a nature, trying to work with our conditioned nature, we have the nature of a Shudra, but we understand that we should try to be endeavoring for the Brahminical standard. So, are we being unreal by trying to attain that, or trying to act within that, or not? You know, what is the proper approach? In this then, we need to divide it a little bit, because when we put it all, we generally tend to throw it all together. First thing would be that, okay, that any good quality means, well, let's start a little bit farther back. Shudra is doing pretty good. They're humans, they're Aryans. Mlechas, Yavanas, you know, Chandalas, all these things, these are subhuman. So, those who follow the Vedic culture, those are called human. Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they follow Vedic culture. Those who don't follow Vedic culture are outside of that. So Shudra is looking up. Right? You know what I say? So, from that angle, then that's one thing, then we should already understand Shudra is great. You know? It's good. It's human. Well, we have a tendency of Shudras low class and, you know, finish and this and that. No, it's already good. But there's better than that. You know, there's better than that. There's the one who, he can generate funds and he's willing to give it away to other people. Right? That'll be harder for the common man, the Shudra, to do. He can work for others, and what he gets, mainly he has to keep. He doesn't have that much, he doesn't have that mood of generosity. Greater generosity than that, then he creates the environment in which everybody else is protected and can function. Like that. And his satisfaction is everyone is performing their duties properly and the environment is prosperous. Then the Vaishya can work. Then broader than that is that giving the Shastra. Because that's the real thing. Because based on that, the Kshatriya is worth, and based on that, then the character of the Vaishya comes. Right? Tendency of the Shudra is to not base it on scripture, it's simply emotion. Vaishya will be based on scripture as long as it's profitable. That's why there's so much profit mentioned by the scripture. Otherwise the Vaishya will drop it as not being practical. Because the Vaishyas pride themselves in being the ultimate in pragmatic minimalists. They're extremely proud of it. I mean, probably you could say rabidly proud of it. That if it doesn't immediately make profit, it's nonsense. And they're so convinced of that that they think that's the way the whole rest of the world should work. That's why we're in a problem now in modern society, because the bourgeois run the world. And it makes profit. They couldn't care less what happens to it. Like that, as long as they are riding in a, you know, nice, you know, a high class bucket to hell, it doesn't matter. You know, they're happy. You know, like that. So that's the thing. Is the Shudra is good because he follows the Vedic culture, but the depth of it, the fineness of it, and that may not be inherent in him. That's why the other orders are better. So that's one. Now, coming from, I mean, anyone, whatever their background, then being a devotee, automatically you know Brahman, because that's what the Shastra is, the instruction of Brahman. So a devotee knows Brahman. So that makes them Brahman. But that's by consciousness. Right? Now, and that's the most important, that's the Vaishnava. That's when the consciousness becomes Brahman. You know, that's the best. First is when the knowledge becomes Brahman. Then next is when the activities become Brahman. But most important is when the consciousness becomes Brahman. So one's already starting with that principle, is that the consciousness is Brahman, so one is Brahman. So that should be accepted without a problem. So all devotees are, in that way, equal. But now another thing that one has to separate is between the social duties and the economic duties. That's generally taught, because then we'll take, oh, okay, so we should be Brahmins, but that's not by occupation. That's by character. Because one who has the consciousness of Brahman should also have the character of Brahman. It's natural. But if you have the consciousness, the character will come. You have the character, the consciousness may or may not come. Does that make sense? So the two, better to be, have the right consciousness, and maybe the character isn't there, but it'll come with time if we avoid offense like that. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the aspects of cleanliness, respect, faith in the scriptures, tolerance, humility, these are all the qualities that are there, that are the brahminical that we strive for. Does that make sense? And also, because it's a personal thing, then sadhana, as much as we can for that, we strive for that, however great. And then, you know, the basic thing, we do our 16 rounds, we do the other things like that. But, you know, doing beyond that, then that's, it should only come naturally. Does that make sense? The occupation, that's not important, other than the transcendental occupation of preaching. It means we're giving the knowledge to others. We study the scriptures, we give it. So that should be there. So the preaching is there. But that's preaching. That's part of our service, actually. It's part of our sadhana. So that's the Bhagavat occupation, right? But as far as the Pancharatra and deity worship means, we follow, our life is regulated according to Pancharatra. We're getting up, we're taking a bath, we're brushing the teeth, we're doing all these things, we go to the temple. That's all Pancharatra. But now the regulation that comes from occupation, you know, how we make our money, that one doesn't have to change. One has the nature of a Shudra, one continues as a Shudra. That's how one makes one's money. But one has the brahminical character and the brahminical consciousness. One will find even one's Shudra occupation will go better. Because anybody who's nice, any boss is going to take care of. Like that. That's why I said if the Shudra is loyal, they're hardworking, they work for the benefit of the other person, and they can cooperate with the others who are, how you say, important to who they're working for, then it'll work. But if you break any of those four down to that degree, then the boss is not going to be happy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that's that. Those same, yeah, does that make sense? So that remains. And developing those qualities of the Shudra aren't a problem because those are the same qualities that a devotee has to have anyway. He does have a service attitude. He is working for Krishna's benefits. He does is a well-wisher towards Krishna's devotees and facilities. Right? Does that make sense? So the same elements of chastity that a Shudra has, then is what a devotee has. It's the same that a woman has, same as a brahmachari. So because that is the, because the ultimately it is, devotee is feminine, Krishna is masculine. So those characters there then fall into anybody who's dependent. Does that make sense? So do it following one's duties there, then in such a way pleasing to Krishna, then it develops one's devotional attitude also. It's not detrimental. Is that okay? Which?
Humility?
Yeah, humility. Yeah, because it's just a role. That's the point. But we don't have to overly emphasize that. It is. You know, I say, a devotee in a masculine body. Okay, that's a big deal. You know, that's what they are. It's not that they are men, it's just that they are. Because the point is that's what the role is. And so one just plays that role. Because it's Krishna's pastime. It's the material pastime. And the pastime is his material energy. That means it's the pastime of the universal form. But it still is Krishna's pastime. So we can take part in that. And so if we do the part nicely, it's called pious. We move up. We don't do it nicely, it's called impious. And we move down in our roles, right? Just like if you're a good actor, then you get a better role. You're not a good actor, you're on the side. You know, or you're sweeping in the back or taking out the garbage. You know, that's as close as you get to the stage, you know. Because you're not a good actor, so therefore, you know, you're some, you know, bug in some, you know, papaya somewhere, you know, like that, because it's, you know, that's all the better you can play your part. So that's just the drama. So within it, it's a matter of how to be Krishna conscious. Our lack of Krishna conscious will reflect on our role, and so then it will come across that, oh, it's being too male, being male or female, and so it's not that, because it's actually not that at all. Because a real male doesn't act like that, and a real female doesn't act like that. It means the problem in both is they're self-centered and not satisfied. Krishna can be self-centered, but he's satisfied, he's Atmarama. But because he's already satisfied, then he can expand that. So he's actual male. And female is just the only serve. Well, in the material world, females also have the masculine element. So that's the problem. Is in the masculine personality, the element that's actually the underlying feminine nature from being soul, that's their weakness of being males. And the females, their weakness is that they want to be male. So both of those points is what makes the culture fall apart. You know, you see it works perfectly. See, Yudhishthir is male, Draupadi is female. It works. You know, and they're both powerful. You know, and they both do great things. And they're both very knowledgeable, intelligent, dynamic. But they both have that, so they're strong. To that degree that you add the male to the female and the male to the, I mean, male to the female to the male, to that degree it starts to break down. Then there's dissatisfaction. Does that make some sense? You know. So that's the thing, but it's just a role. It's a duty. One is in that position, one plays the role. Because in last life one was in a different position, different role. So if the role is always changing. It's like musical chairs, you know. So it's just that's secondary. That's done. But the main thing is on one's always trying to improve the character, improve the consciousness, and improve the sadhana in a way that will not disturb you. Consciousness, that doesn't need to disturb. Character also, that's always one should endeavor hard for that one. But as far as sadhana, that you take it at the rate that you can handle it. You know, don't get up at midnight, chant, you know, 64 rounds of Brahmanalartik and, you know, eat the, you know, how you say, you know, 1 teaspoon of buttermilk, you know. Raghunath Das did it, hey, you know, so it won't work, you know. Does that make sense? You find what works for you. but at the same time is one should always be trying to improve. That, okay, one is a Shudra, one is this, but that's not good enough. We have to be a Shudra for Krishna. And as a devotee, we are brahminical by consciousness. So that has to come to brahminical. We shouldn't be Shudra by consciousness. Right? Brahman by consciousness means transcendence. Shudra by consciousness means sensuality. Their fame, their art, their expression. That's their consciousness. That may be your occupation, but it shouldn't be the consciousness. You know what I'm saying? The artist is expressing as an occupation. Right? But he should see that that is very much purified, that what he expresses is pleasing to Krishna when it comes to his sadhana and his other things like that, his interaction with the devotees. Yeah, that's... Yeah. You don't have to change. And it's not that by everybody is the same conscience, but there's a difference in work. Because everybody can't do the same. Let's say you have 10 people and you want to cook a feast. They can't all be cooking the same preparation at the same time. That wouldn't be equal. It sounds very nice. It's great platitudes, and you can say all these nice things, and it really sounds sweet on the ear. It rolls off the tongue very nicely. But in reality, if you have 10 people, they should be cooking 10 preparations. You know, or a few of them are cooking, and a few of them are preparing. You know, whatever works, whatever is, whoever, if out of 10 only one knows how to cook, the other 9 should assist. If all 10 know how to cook, and they want to cook 10 preparations, then they cook like that. You know, unless one person's very good at that, then someone else assists. You know, I'm just saying it's whatever is the best for Krishna. So all these works have to be done. If it's recognized, it works very, very smoothly. Because otherwise you have a community where if you discuss Varnashram, no one's a Shudra, but except for a handful of people, everybody goes out and has a job. You know what I'm saying? But that cannot be brought up because we're all devotees. Yes, you're a devotee by consciousness, but who said your conditioned nature or how you're going to make money is Brahman? Right? Because we're not trying to become Brahman by occupation. We're trying to become Brahman by consciousness. Astrological to some degree is important, but it's how you apply it because and there's a phenomena that I've observed is that when somebody comes into Krishna consciousness by association, because the family you're born in and your association make up basically 50% of your nature. The other 50% is last life, so you can't do much about that. Or even birth, you can't do much about it. But whatever it is. But last life, what you were in the last life, whether they did the death rites for you. Because if they did the death rites, whatever, the good things will come through, if not, they'll be blocked. So you may have been a Brahmin in last life. This child didn't do the death rites. You may not take birth in a Brahmin family this life, because all the good things didn't come through. But you'll still have that Brahminical nature. So that would be the weird thing. You get these kids that are born in really, you know, grubby families, but they're so sweet and nice and so saintly. That's because of this, or because of bad thoughts. If one has cultivates bad thinking, you know, then it will create birth in low families like that. That also is one of the reasons for birth in low families. So then that sort of the association. So by association, you may have a different character, but the family you're born in then has a nature. So you may act like that, or the friends you act like that. You come in contact with Krishna consciousness, the association is different. You start to become purified. Then you see, I've seen kids go from being really, you know, it would be a euphemism to call them a Shudra, you know, and then with time then they come up, and then at one point when they're all, you know, hustling and this and that, another time then they're trying to lord it over, manage everything, and then at one point you just come and settle down and they're brahminical. Not very many go through all four, but it's not uncommon for them to go through one or two. So it's like when you see, when everybody comes in off the street, most everybody is pretty grungy. But with time then they start to manifest their own as they become purified. It will come. So Prabhupada's principle was, you use the fruit what it looks like today. You know, that was his point, is that maybe the person inherently has a brahminical nature, but it's so covered by their bad association and acting in this way now, as another form. So you just engage them like that, because by engaging they'll be purified. Then with time they'll see. You'll find that as much you'll get means someone has an idea, I am like this, or I want to do this, or they have an attitude that's, they want to do something that's not really nice or good. But if you explain it to them why it's not good, and they understand and stop, that's the best. Or you explain it to them, point out an example, they can see it in someone else, they change, that's next best. But many times they have to go through it. So if in a controlled environment you allow them to do it, then they quickly understand, you know, what, that it's not their nature. But it has to be in a controlled environment in which it's everything's still in place. It can't just be let go. Otherwise they don't learn, because it's through knowledge that one knowledge and application, one gets understanding, one gets realization. So then they're engaged. They have the nature, they want to be the big, big manager. Okay, here's big, big man, go for it. And if they can do it, it'll be great. And if they can't do it, then if it's been done in the right way, then they'll understand, oh hey, I'm not a manager, or I'm not that level of manager. And so then they naturally will start to find their position like that. I couldn't hear the first part.
I'm just thinking about the nectar astrology chart that's done,
then
we would know
about it. You know, it gives a good, yeah. No, astrology is getting it is pretty good, but it also depends on the astrologer. Because see, astronomy is a hard science. But astrology is interpretive. So that depends upon the actual knowledge and expertise of the astrologer. Basic general things you can tell, but like you could tell that, okay, this person is going to be very profit-oriented. But, so you'll say, oh, this person will be a business person, and so they wouldn't get into the temple. But they may be, it may be that they get in the temple and work out and just create all the funds for the temple. You know what I'm saying? And they may be completely working without desire for anything themselves. Could be. So it's sometimes hard to tell. Is that is what you're born with, but now they've joined the movement, that's so many years later. So you have to see is what goes. That's what they're born with, but that's their mentality can't adjust because they're going through the different stages and that. Astrologers will be very confident that they can tell everything, but there's a limit. Palmistry tells what's going on today, but still they don't. It's not can't tell you exactly what's going to happen. You can predict. You know, it's just like super hungry brahmachari, empty room, no one there, large plate of mahaprasad. Okay, now let us, you know, let our great, you know, soothsayers of the future say what they think will happen. Okay, so you can pretty much guarantee what will happen. But at the same time, there is always that independence. The person can get there, and just before they hit, they go, oh, it's a codicil. And that's it. So it's normal they would do that, but because of developing higher values as a devotee, things turn over quicker. If they're not a devotee, basically, as the chart says it, that's the way it's going to go. But you also have God moves things around. It's just like, okay, you're supposed to have a condition with this, and then, you know, in this, you know, in January of this year, then you're going to have all this and that, and, you know, and then nothing happens. But then you find later on that condition comes up. So it's just whatever Krishna wants it to happen, how much he wants it to happen. Maybe the reason for that condition coming up according to karma was to correct the particular mentality. But mentality has already been corrected by devotional service. It doesn't have to happen. You know what I'm saying? But with the karmis, whether they've corrected it or not, they've done it. They You know, you go to the restaurant, you make an order, you change your mind, it doesn't matter. You still get your onion rings and everything, that still comes. You know, it's like you can say, well, I don't want this now, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that with the devotees it's different. So it'll be close, but then exactly what it means. You know, they say, so there was somebody's chart. Oh, well, you're going to lose your position. This is going to be a very bad year for you. You're going to lose your position. You're going to end up, you know, performing really simple, menial activities. Your residence won't be fixed. You're not going to be, you know, steady. You won't have any steady income. Oh, this is going to be a really bad time for you. Right? The devotee was very freaked out. They were a temple president. What happened was, as it came up, they got an opportunity to travel with their spiritual master for a year as a secretary. So according to the chart, it was looking really bad. But according to what actually happened, it was the best time of their life. You know? Or another famous one is, oh, you're going to have royal patronage. You're going to be, you know, put up by the king and fed by the king and everything like this. And you think, wow, I'm in for a good time. And the guy ended up in jail. Because the king gives him a place to stay in the jail and gives him food. So that's the thing, to really be able to tell. It's very kind of, the better they are, the closer they get. So it's a very good indication. But one has to also see what's there. Just like the calculation that you make must also match the observation. So that's why they would both have calculation and observatories. Is that you know the planet should be here, you look at the you look at the observation, it's there. If the observation is different from the calculation, you generally adjust the calculation to match the observation, then you start from there. In other words, where you're counting zero is wrong. If you move zero, then it works. So that's... Nowadays, they don't observe. There's no observatories that are functioning. So they're working with, at best, 300-year-old calculation of zero. Some of them are working at 1,000 years ago. So the amount of corrections they have to make, I think for the sun they have to make something like 100, and for the moon about 1,000 corrections. They have formulas for it, but that's the problem. Is that they don't have observatories, that they just see that the sun is now, it is there on the horizon right now, so therefore I just shift everything to that. They don't do it. Why? I don't know. But somehow or another they don't. So, I'm like that. So then sometimes things are off. Also depends on which one you use, because you're dealing with now which Ayanamsa you use. You use Raman, you use Lahiri, you use, you know, like that. Then that moves at degrees. I've seen a chart, you know, where you say that, okay, match two persons. Using one Ayanamsa, it's like a write-off. You use another Ayanamsa, it's fabulous. So that's also there. So that's why you also always must observe, you know. Then you also have the point is, the person has to commit to it. They have to make the endeavor. You know, they're not. They maybe have the nature, but they don't commit to it. That's a very common thing. Someone has the ability, they won't use it. Someone else doesn't have the ability, and they're dying to be able to do it. They're so upset with the person that has it and doesn't use it. So you get a general idea from that, that you know that there'll be this direction and that direction. Try to arrange for them that, but always have the finger on the pulses as it's going, watching the direction and the fine points within it. Because even if it's business in what? You know what I'm saying? It could be business in goods, business in you know, in the stock market, business in anything. You know, it could be, you know what I'm saying? So that's also very different, what it is, you know. Or manager, but what kind of manager? Business manager, you know, Shudra manager, Kshatriya manager, Brahmin manager. They're different fields. They're saying, a senior teacher is managing a school, but it's for education, so you can't say they're Kshatriya, they're a Brahmin. Kshatriya is managing, but he's managing to protect the people. Vaishya is managing, and it's to make profit. Shudra is managing because he gets paid for it. They're all managers. Does that make sense? The Brahman is selling something to you because this is good for you, in that this is what the scriptures say. So this book here is giving you knowledge about God and your nature, so therefore you should take this. They're not a salesperson, they're a preacher. Right? The Kshatriya is looking at it. This is the right thing you should do. You as a jiva should be doing this. You should not be doing this. Therefore, you should take this book, study it, and do like this. Because they want to establish a religious principle. Vaishya is, this book is a great thing. You know, hey, you know, we got spiritual light. You want to buy some enlightenment, you know, here. It's like, they see the profit off of it. You know what I'm saying? That's their inspiration to do it. The Shudra is the art of selling. They know the art of how to sell it, and that they've sold it, that's what's good, because the money's not for them anyway. Kshatriya, they get money, they're going to use it to establish religious principles anyway, so they want you to follow your religious principles, so money goes into that. Brahman, if they get money from, it goes into education. You understand? So that's why you can't say, which is what? You know, a singer, you know. They sing as an occupation, that's a Shudra. But by nature in general, Vaishyas have fabulous voices. Because of the nature of Venus, though Venus controls the throat. So it's part of business. So they generally you have Lord Caitanya's associates, Vaishya Ghosh. Ghosh, Vaishyas. So generally they have very good voices. Kshatriyas learn it as a hobby. You know, it's something to do with recreation. They love recreation, so music is a very fine recreation. Because of the passion, generally they have good voices. Brahmins may or may not. You know, the rare ones that do, then it's more of a, it's by shastra for the deities. Like that, for preaching, for like that. It's not an occupation. So that's there. So it's one has to be very, very careful. In dealing with it, one doesn't use stereotype concepts of what's there. Does that make sense? Like that. Okay. Yeah.
Can you ask me about the
How does the masculine principle establish the facilities?
You were saying that the Purusha doesn't want to put a point on that, yes, I control the situation, but he still has to make the boundaries for the feminine nature to act.
The masculine doesn't have to establish that they are in control, because they are. It just may take time for the other to recognize. The point is that depending upon what is the feminine nature, that defines what is the facilities that are created. And because Krishna is the ultimate male, therefore there is standards he has set for that field. Okay, you have a particular female, they have a particular field of interest. Then the male creates that field, but according to the standards given by God. You know what I'm saying? The male is arranged because it's standards. And for to create an opportunity for interaction. The female wants it because it's what they like. You know what I'm saying? If they like piety, then they'll like it according to scripture. It's an emotional thing. Well, the masculine thing is an intellectual thing. This is what the scripture says. This is right. This is wrong. It's not an emotional thing. So therefore, depending upon what it is, what aspect of the energy you want to work with, therefore you endeavor according to your innate ability to create that field according to the standards. Then you have to operate, maintain that field according to standards, and interact with people in that field according to the standards. That makes it masculine, because then it's stable. Because feminine functions if it's stable. It means there has to be a stable point. After that, then it can go wherever it likes. A flag, the pole is stable. The rest of it flaps. The part that's attractive is the flapping part, not the part connected to the pole. But if it's not connected to the pole, it's not attractive. Right? Because it can't flap. a flag sitting on the ground without a pole is not attractive. Right? Fire that's connected to the wood is nice, but as soon as it goes away from the wood, it goes out. You know, and no one's looking down at the fire. When there's a flame going, no one's looking, oh, great coals. You know, they're looking at the flames. That's what's nice, because it's changing, it's bewildering, it's never the same. So that's the attractive feature of the feminine. But the problem is the masculine is trying to prove that he's masculine, so the constant changing of the feminine throws off his feeling of authority. Right? Because if he wants something, it should happen, that's feminine. Because I want it, the other should make it happen, that's feminine. Right? The wife wants something, the husband arranges it. The husband wants something, the wife arranges it. It's feminine. Then it was frustrated. Right? Because you're expecting them to take them, you want it, so they become the masculine. But it's not the nature. You know what I'm saying? So these things create the difficulty. So if it's understood, what is that principle? Then it works. Because you understand that in this, okay, then it's whatever the mood of the woman is, that's the mood that we're going to move. We're going to reciprocate with that mood. Right? We're going to start from there. In any case, we're going to start from there. Even if it's a wrong mood, and we need to correct it, bring it to the standard, still we have to start with that. So in other words, Krishna, as you surrender, he reciprocates. So the same way as the male has to interact with the female according to what her mood is. Does that make sense? Then it works. Because if that's caught, very quickly it comes to. Because the feminine wants to interact. But they're going to interact according to how they want to interact. Not according to how the male wants them to interact. You know what I'm saying? The woman will do something to please the man if she's pleased with the man. Right? So, unless she's pleased, it's not going to happen. So unless he interacts with her, how is her mood, she's not going to be pleased. Therefore, what he's looking for is not going to be found. Does that make sense? Parents want them to make this.
Yes, parents want you to make this. That's okay, but they must want you to leave your small children.
Yeah, well, so they're not balancing the whole thing, because the point is that the mother as dependent is different as the mother as providing. But the point is they want everything. That's the weakness of the feminine, is they demand everything, which is not possible. The wife wants the husband always at home, at the same time he wants him out making money. It doesn't work. You've got to find where is the balance of that makes it work for that situation. You know, that they're both comfortable with. How much out, how much in. You know, and there's always a compromise because it's a material world. But you have to work. So then that's... Does that make some sense? So it has to be recognized that it's there. So there it is. The mother is always mother. She's always senior. But at the same time, as he is taking care. So that aspect, she can't be blind to that. But the feminine ego is such, it's very hard for it to accept not being right or not being in control. You know, like that. So it's a natural, how you say, drama, that the man is working according to what the woman wants, but the woman makes the man look like he's in control. So each one is doing according to the other, you know, because of the ego. But the, yeah. Does that make sense? So with training, then the feminine ego is more workable. And the most important is communication. Because the point is each person's individual, so what they mean by what they say, that has to be known. Because just like, let's say, a very unknown principle, one begins to know somebody, they're more careful and more sensitive. The more you know them, it seems to be, then it gets more and more sensitive, but then at some point it seems they become less sensitive. So the natural thing is to think that the relationship is broken down because they take you for granted, they're familiar, they're not so sensitive, they're more self-centered, they're not so careful in what they do. But it's not necessarily as broken down, it may have gotten deeper. Because one of the symptoms of attachment is that you're so relaxed with the other person that you don't have to make any show whatsoever, even though you should be. Right? But that's why the training is there, that you know, even though I don't need to, I still do. So in other words, you're so relaxed that you don't mind showing the person who you really are, who you've actually been hiding since the day you met them. Does that make sense? So sometimes, so without good communication, you won't know that that's what's going on, and the one party won't know how to be tolerant with it because it appears that the relationship's breaking down, and then the other party won't know that, oh, these things are stepping over the line of etiquette, so therefore I should be careful about that because the other person is important, so I don't want to disturb them. So it's not a matter of it's being trippy, it's just a matter of being more careful. Does that make sense? So it has to be communicated what it is they mean, what it is they're looking for, what it is they want. Because you can't have everything. They can't tell, it's just like this. The king creates a facility for the vaishyas to do business. Vaishyas do business, kshatriyas don't. When the kshatriya tells the vaishya how to do the business, that's when the business doesn't work. So that's the point. Right? The parent wants you to do something for them, but they're dependent upon you. You do it according to your nature and get it done. So it's, one is out of respect for them, you're taking care, but out of respect for you, then they have to let you do your work. They won't let you do your work, that means they're independent, they should do it themselves. You know what I'm saying? No one needs backseat drivers, especially when they can't drive. Does that make sense? So that's why the etiquette is there, so one knows how to balance it all. Is that okay? Is the masculine enjoyed by adjusting the feminine? The masculine, see, it's different also in what's there. The masculine is by what he wants to do, he gets done. The thing itself may not give any pleasure. You know what I'm saying? But it's that he was able to control it and therefore enjoy it. That is his pleasure. But whether he actually gets any pleasure out of the enjoyment, that's another thing. Right? So the man gets frustrated when he can't control it. The woman gets frustrated when she can't enjoy it. Right? There must be, if you can't enjoy it, the next thing to do is go to control, because when you control it, then you can make it the arrangement so that you can enjoy it. So that's the control element of women, is only how much it takes so that the environment that they're experiencing is stable and always pleasant. But if someone else is doing it for them, they don't need to. Right? The masculine has to feel that they're running it, it's going the way they want it. So, if they're smart, they understand that is general principles, but they will go by not how I planned it to go, but by what are the, in other words, I'm working through the channels of how energy works rather than how I think it should work. Does that make sense? Yeah? Then there's still the element of control, but it's completely taking consideration the feminine. Right? The feminine control is simply because they trust. Right? The females will control the male only because they trust them. Right? Does that make sense? Because you see, a shy woman will only control her own men. A loose woman tries to control all men. That's another way to tell a woman's culture. Who she controls. If it's the world, then she's loose. If it's just her own men, then that means she's got character. Because to control someone, you must trust them, because you've got to get close to them to control them. So that means you have a relationship. The more you control, the more intimate. You understand? So that's why when women are chased, they're careful about the environments they control in. They could control, that's not a problem. One Indian gentleman was telling me, he says, and very good family, brought up, girl was very active but very shy and everything, and, you know, got married, and she's traveling around the world and doing all these different things and stuff. And the father made the point, it's not that she can't do all these things, she could easily do it, but it's not the culture to do it. It's not that the woman doesn't have the brains to do anything that the man's doing, but it's not the culture. The men do those things, the women do these other things, that's all. Does that make sense? So if there's a need, there's an emergency, she can do it. That's not a problem, she's not a wallflower. But because it's not the natural relationship and not the natural experience where they get to taste, therefore they don't. It means that when a woman's happy, she likes to be alone. I mean, she likes to be with people. She's unhappy, that's when she likes to be alone. The men can also be happy alone. Women can't understand it. Right? So if a woman wants to be alone, something's wrong. She's happy, she wants to be with somebody. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it would be natural, whatever she does, somebody would be there. She wouldn't be doing anything alone. You know what I'm saying? So when she travels, she won't travel alone, because if she's happy, she'd want to be with somebody. You understand? Well, the man can be happy alone, therefore he can travel alone. You understand? It fits the nature. If they have to, there's no one there, okay, then the woman travels alone. But if there's a preference, she'd always go with somebody. You know what I'm saying? Men like their time alone to contemplate the, you know, the unanswered questions of the universe, right? But women don't have a problem with unanswered questions of the universe, right? They're not sitting there trying to figure out how many angels dance on the head of a pin, or whether, you know, if you're in the forest and a tree falls, did it make sound? That's, men get into that thing. Women don't bother. Right? Maybe you bother once, but then you need variety, so, okay, if the bush fell, then it's a, that makes sense. If the
man is always reciprocating with the feminine, that seems like the feminine
is control. Now you understood. That's called the light went on.
So how does the man control?
How does the man control? Because if he's reciprocating the family, he is controlled. Yeah. Because what I said is the situation, the facilities, and the standards that he sets a cult. That's the thing. But what's going to happen? Right? You know what I'm saying? Which side the flag is on, the pole doesn't say. That's depending on the wind blowing. Wind blows this way, the flag's on this side. Wind blows that way, the flag's on that side. But where it's connected to, that's stable. So there's certain standards of the family, there's traditions of the family. Those are maintained. But exactly what? Okay, you eat good food, but what food you're going to eat today, that you can't say. That's up to the women. If you have a particular thing you want, then women like to fulfill needs, because then that makes them needed, so then they'll do it. But as long as it enhances relationship. But if it's just a matter, hey, cook this for me today, then there's no relationship. Therefore, it feels exploited. So then there's not that sensitivity. Right? So that won't be appreciated. But they know you really like this, and they like that, because then they can do something that you like. That means they're needed. Because everyone has to feel needed. So the father is creating the environment that everybody else needs, so that is his position. That's his use. Does that make sense? So they have to be in some way physically, emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, and best all of them creating something. Otherwise, why does the family need it? You know what I'm saying? That's what you want. Everything is. But I'm just saying, everything's a combination of masculine and feminine. That's why you have to know what they work, so you know the situations in which one is applied. But at the same time, there is the overall. The ladies will apply their masculinity still in a feminine way. And the men, their femininity will still be applied in the masculine. They become, because basically it breaks down when the men aren't creating the next generation of men. Then that next generation of failed men can't support the women. The women will go independent, because women have to have their facilities and have their good experience. There's no question they can. Men can get by for some time without it, as long as there's a future plan. Women can work for a higher future plan as long as the present one works. You know? So therefore they will go and get it. In going and getting it, they will control. In controlling it, then the generation after that generation of men will be even weaker, because now they're controlled. And then those men start to pick up the feminine nature. And so they start to lack the tolerance and the patience and that to deal with the women. But at the same time, it's because they're functioning with the women, and one of the main fields of women is sensuality. Not sexuality, sensuality. The men don't necessarily distinguish the difference between sensuality and sexuality. So then by always working in the women's world, controlled by the women's world, therefore they pick up the sensuality, but they apply it as sexuality. So therefore their only interaction with women is sex. And so basically you give it a few generations, and that's what is the present situation. In other words, in the karmic world, back in the 50s, somehow the men lost it. Like that. And then you see in the 60s, the women started to go independent. Because the men weren't providing what they needed, the shelter and everything, so they go out and get it themselves. And then by a few generations of just the women being in control, now the men are like women. You know, they sit there and they manicure the little beards and the eyebrows and their makeup, and they're disgusting. You know, basically their only thing you call masculine is that they got a genital that's masculine. But other than that, they're not. You know, they're not. Yeah, means in other words, just like you have to create Brahmins to create the Varnashram society. Brahmins, well, you create Brahmins, they'll create Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas will create the rest. Same way as if you can create men, then you can create women. Because men come from men, women come from men. Women only act as women. The feminine nature acts as feminine if there's actual men. Otherwise it will take on the masculine role. So then proper men will create both good women and good men. So that has to be in place. You know, so that's why it's an important element to do that. But it takes time. You're talking generations. like that. Generations. Maybe it'll come. It's just time. Unfortunately, just the generations at present may not be able to appreciate the facility of that, but point is then ultimately, because that's not the ultimate goal, is creating a properly running material facilities, but it's helpful in Krishna consciousness. It's not a distraction. In other words, a lot of devotees get distracted because their material facilities are so lacking. You know, either physically or emotionally or intellectually, that they tend to then turn to something else. And it creates a disturbance like that. So if it's working naturally and peacefully, then they'll be able to absorb themselves nicely. And then the focus can be on Krishna consciousness. That. But it's only worthwhile if the focus is on Krishna consciousness. Like, let us just look at an approach for this. You have, take a purport, it deals with Varnashram, and there's a lot of them. You're like right here, all these ones are dealing with it. But sometimes he's dealing with it as a concept. So Prabhupada will generally use one sentence, or two sentences will support Varnashram. The rest of the paragraph or paragraphs are talking about the weakness of Varnashram that's not connected to Krishna. So now, people that don't follow Varnashram and are from the bourgeois culture, then everything goes by numbers. So you take that the amount of information that's given against Varnashram is greater than that which is for Varnashram, therefore Prabhupada is debunking Varnashram. Therefore, we don't care for all this. Though you could probably, a huge amount of Prabhupada's purports and things are all on establishing Varnashram. Because he starts off, human life begins with Varnashram. So that means, and human means one who is, knows God, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. That means one who is following that is following Varnashram. Right? So for us, it works in the reverse, that this kind of preaching tends to keep us from taking up Varnashram. Right? But Prabhupada's looking at the long run. Okay, a few generations may stumble on it, you know. But in the future, Varnashram, as the generations go, Varnashram is going to be normal. Now, why you need, and so they, of course, that one sentence that human life begins with Varnashram, and then, yes, of course, I'm human, I follow. All families follow, my father follow, his father follow. But now, what's to keep him from becoming Hindu? It's the rest of the paragraph that tells that Varnashram, not connected to God, is useless. Does that make some sense? Because that's what our future generations will have to deal with. Now we're dealing with the lechas and yamanas trying to figure out, you know, how to be human. But when they are human, they have to see that they're transcendental. Because otherwise we don't want to have gone to all this work, gone and picked up a bunch of people out of the street, make them into Brahmins, they create the Kshatriyas, they create the culture, now Varnashram is happening and then they all become Hindus. That's not what Prabhupada wanted. We don't want Hindus like that. We want Vaishnavas. So therefore, when it is nice, it's like this. Devotees talk about renunciation because they're growing up and their family was disgusting, their present family situation is disgusting, whatever they deal with is disgusting. So they talk Varnashram, they talk renunciation. And renunciation is better than attachment. So because it gets one closer to getting out of the material world. But because of bad attachment here, and it's been bad experience, they also shy away from attachment to Krishna. You understand? Philosophically, they know it's right, but attachment to Krishna is a weakness because they've thrown out attachment because it's only been bad for them. But renunciation is very easy, you know, to the exclusion of all else, you know, then break down anything, destroy anything, you know, it's like, you know, the common thing, you know, you get married and all this and that, and then they don't talk to their wife because they're, you know, not attached. Or, you know, the mother, she has the children and then she's always at the temple because she's not attached. Or, you know what I'm saying? It's typical. because attachment, they don't know how to deal with it properly. Now, could you imagine, okay, you have the man, he's grown up in this family, it's been nice, it's been a great experience, everybody's supported him. He grows up, he marries a girl, everything is very wonderful, his children are wonderful, he's got all the things, what's to keep him from not being deviated and not thinking of Krishna? You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. So that's what's happened to Hindus. It's pious, it's nice, so then they don't. The young people now that have turned away from it, it's falling apart, you know, like that, then they're the ones that take up Krishna consciousness. There's a certain class of those in the Vedic, in the, you know, following what's left of the Vedic culture. They're nice, they're pious, they'll come to the temple and give some money, you know, if you have a kirtan, they'll clap, you know, and all that. But that's it. They're Hindus. They won't surrender. So the point is, we want to avoid that. So then it's got to be based on all these things that is being used only for devotional service. That's what the Bhagavatam opens this way. One should perform one's religious duties for God consciousness. To elevate yourself out of the material world to please God. It shouldn't be used for economic development and sense gratification. Those will come anyway. You're a nice person, good things will happen. You know, you're a bad person, bad things will happen. It's just the way it is. It's just, does that make sense?
It's weird that child of the heart should come to the mantra that comes to the mantra of self, things to take care of, take away, forgive away.
The chanting won't get in the way. The point is that come is that if you follow the Varnashram, eventually you do it right, the interactions, the family interactions will actually be nice. It'll actually be nice. I mean, it's just like you see, you know, some cultured Hindus come to the temple and they come with their kids of all ages. They all look nice, don't behave nicely, don't yell and scream, they do everything right. So it's nice. You know, but you know, when it comes to being serious and coming to the temple regularly, chanting your japa and this and that, there's no time. They're too busy being nice. You know, like that. So they can't fit it in. So Krishna consciousness to balance it, so that you don't too much go into the material energy, but at the same time is you don't ignore it. Better to ignore it than be totally absorbed, because devotees ignoring it, at least they're doing devotional service, so they're having, you know, their material life is hell, but at least their spiritual life. So if that hellish experience doesn't in any way compromise their spiritual drive, it's okay. But it tends to. Especially it does for the women. It's the worst. Because women, by nature, are religious, and religion should get profit. And I'm not, and okay, I'm Krishna conscious, I'm chanting my rounds, I'm going to Mangalarti, I'm doing everything, where's the profit? Why it's not nice? Why my experience is not good? So they'll tend to have a tendency to doubt it. Then the men attached to them, then they'll have to doubt it. You know what I'm saying? So there has to be some form of culture that is functioning, the women feel comfortable. If they're comfortable, then so much more time is there. A man gets mind is disturbed, it'll disturb it for a little time. And another man talks to him, depending if it's mild, or 5 minutes work it out. Very much, a little bit more. But the women will be much greater. For the same problem, it'll take much more time to work it out. So that means 45 minutes went instead of 5 minutes. So you could have done something else in that time. And if she's constantly disturbed, then how much time is lost? So that means she's not following anything Krishna conscious, her family's not, nobody is. Right? So unless the women are satisfied, then no one else is going to be satisfied in that situation. So therefore the religion or culture is very important. Because without it, the women won't be situated nicely. And if they're not, then the men that are attached to them won't be. Because there's very few men that aren't, that can function without it. Right? Though it can inspire the other men, so that they keep them on this side. So it balances, so in their association with the women, that they don't lose it. You know, they maintain their position. But at the same time, is they have to know that interface. Is that okay?
Okay.
come up with four questions, just one point. Keep trying to follow the questions. You're talking about the various examples of masculine and feminine, for example, the relationship between mother and child. So mother's feminine takes on a masculine role to
It's not the masculine role, it's just a masculine element of authority.
And then, so that, the feminine you're experiencing because we're in feminine bodies, this feminine is emotional, is different to the feminine that is the feminine that is the servant of Krishna. Because even though we take on masculine aspects in this material world, when we're trying to serve Krishna, this feminine, we can focus, we can recognize this feminine in us. We even know that men have got male bodies and their masculine tendencies, and we take on masculine tendencies in our different roles. By our trying to be servant of Krishna, this feminine quality within us, if this stays steady in the center within, even though we're experiencing different subtleties in our rasa, this is just a rasa, and this isn't the essence inside, we can maintain that.
Because that's pure feminine. Yeah. Devotee means pure feminine. In the material world, this is not real feminine, because it's purusha, it's self-centered. Like that. It looks the same. But actually in mentality it's not. Because the woman does it because she'll get gain from it. There's the overlying, because it is a reflection. The mentality is such that they'll do things for others. And it looks like it's selfless, but actually at the end of the line there's something to get back there. You know, like that. You know, even though they put it, because it's natural to serve, the feminine nature is to serve. But the one is, the pure is Krishna's pleasure. And the material is their pleasure. So I may be serving someone else for their pleasure because it will get me something in my pleasure. So that's the pollution of the masculine element within the material feminine nature. But the duties look the same as they do in the spiritual world. And there it is just to please, while here it's not. But because it's a drama, everyone likes a well played drama. You know what I'm saying? It's just like someone comes up to you and says, "Yeah, you know how you're the greatest person, and you're so fabulous, and how we like you so much, and you're so expert." Right? What does this mean? What's the next? What's going to come up? What's going to follow this? No, that's from your side, but what is it going to come from the other side? Why would I be saying all these things? Business, you want something, right? Okay, so, but now you know it's business, but because they've used this approach and praised you, then, okay, what do you want? You understand? So that's the point, is that even though it's false, underlying in the deep depths of the conscience, the woman is not doing it to please the man, but because the external form of it is, the man's pleased. Even though he knows it's bogus. If he's smart enough. But I'm just saying, even if he does know, it doesn't matter, because that's what he wants anyway. Right? So as long as that's the key, is if the duties are performed, it works. Same way as the man is doing it, protecting his son, but he's got his own agenda also. But as long as everything's taken care of, this and that, then who cares? Like that. Women can tolerate that, just like the men. So that's the thing, it doesn't matter. Because you are dealing with a falsity. We are not this body and that, but we identify with it, so the drama of the body is played. And if they're played, it works. But ultimately, as you were saying, the core has to be the Krishna consciousness, we're serving the Krishna. Therefore, all these qualities that a man has to develop to actually perform the role of a man, or the woman to perform the role of a woman, are all important for devotional service. Right? To be humble, tolerant, respectful, and not expect for yourself, those four will make them both work. Like that. Without it, it won't work. It absolutely can't. You don't have these four, relationship doesn't work. Whichever one's missing, it breaks down. The woman does something stupid. She is wrong. But the man reacts badly. And so because he's reacted badly, the experience he's created for the woman is wrong. The woman ignores what she has done wrong, immediately jumps on his bad behavior, and gets all bent out of shape because of that. So she's right on that point, but she's wrong on the other. But because of ego, then there'll be a wall there that you can't get. The man's trying to get a thing on the other side. He's ignoring that I behaved badly. And he's going, but you're doing something wrong. And her thing is you're wrong. You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing is without that tolerance, then the man can't tolerate the dealings of women. Because they're different species. What is a joke for a woman is serious an insult for a man, and vice versa. It just is. To play with emotions is a joke, for men is an insult. You know? To play with status, position, and this and that is a joke for men, but it's not for women. That's serious insult. So, whatever is funny for one, many times it's not for the other. And so unless there's communication in this, unless there's tolerance, unless there's humility, respect, you're not going to get through it. So if it's there, then at another time you bring up, hey, I don't appreciate that kind of joke. And, oh, sorry, I didn't know, because you know, you say that with the boys. Or, you know, it's like, you know, they say all kinds of stuff, and for them it's funny. And they say it around the women, they can't, you know what I'm saying? The boy, by nature, does something, it's funny. The women laugh. You know, okay, and then he does something again, they laugh again. Then he thinks, oh, I should be funny. Then he'll click into male funny. And then he does something funny, and they all go, ugh, gross. You know, so it's just, you know what I'm saying? Because there's a difference. So the idea of the Vedic culture is just everybody knows what the difference is. And you just perform your duties according to that. Doesn't mean we can't do so many things. It doesn't mean that we break down the culture, the etiquette. You know, it's like anything can get done, but it doesn't mean that we don't maintain it as a man or maintain it as a woman, whatever's the culture and etiquette. But we tend to mix, just like being a Brahmin means that I do the occupation of a Brahmin. No, Brahmin means I have the mentality of a Brahmin. Occupation may be something else. So the same way as man doing anything or woman doing anything, the tendency is to mix the two. Right? Just like Indian women get things done without being men. Western women do men things and they look like men. You know what I'm saying? You take an Indian woman, put her on a bicycle, she looks like a woman on a bicycle. Take a Western woman, put her on the bicycle, she looks like a man. Because anything that they've decided as men's things, they do as men. But in the Asian cultures, they can do it. You know, it's just like a woman martial artist. She no way compromises being a woman. And in no time does she ever do things that look like a man. Right? But still the guy's head's been ripped off. Right? You know, so it's just the way it is. I mean, I've been to China and they're probably the closest you can get to everything's the same. They used to wear exactly the same clothes, everything. All the duties and everything. The Chinese have somehow been broken. But the women are always women, the men are always men. Even though they may exactly do the same activities. I've seen it myself. I've been staying at some place. And so the women are cooking. And then sometimes, you know, the woman has to do something else. The men just walk in and cook. It's just like, it would just be like moving hands like this. It's not like, hey, you gotta cook because I gotta do this, you know, like that. What do you mean? It's none of that. It's just like, oh, they're busy doing that, I cook. Or, oh, the men are busy, we cook. Or, it doesn't matter. You know, it's just like, you know, the wife has to pick something else, the husband holds the baby, and if it's not, it goes back to the wife. You know, it's just, there's no tricks. It's just that. And the men are men and the women are women. And they can be so gentle. Like that. So it's just a matter of understanding. You know, there's this idea that the women means they have to be stupid. Right? We have the Western concept of the Vedic woman is a very simple, uneducated, rural girl. Most of our examples in the Shastra are not rural girls, they're Brahmins or Kshatriyas. They're very urban, very cosmopolitan. but somehow or another it hasn't clicked that that's the women that we're training. It's always got to be some uneducated idiot girl, you know, sitting somewhere in some, you know, very simple situation, you know, no brain, no nothing. I hadn't figured it out. You know why it's like that. But it's very common. Anybody who starts talking to Vedic woman, they always talk that side. You know, they're not talking that they're qualified and active and dynamic, but at the same time, they know how to do that without compromising being a woman. Like that, because Prabhupada mentioned, if they act as women, they get everything done. Probably gave the example of that. They were having some kind of a meeting or something, all the senior men and all these things, there was all men there. And the arrangement of the place was you had two doors in each end of the room and there were couches and you had to walk through the middle. The cleaning lady had to get through all these men. And she was very shy, but she had to go. So she just covered her head, went down, very shy, came. And all the men just stood up to move. Right? I've seen it myself. Let's say you're having a program, you're going to outside program, let's say, what do you call those things? You know, they have these things in the park, like in London and stuff like that.
Party.
Yeah, well, no, it's just like the government runs it. A fair, yeah, they have a fair, you know, and you have your security, you have this and that, and those who go and sell things and that go and get tables from them, because it's government tables. You put down a deposit, you get their tables and chairs and put it out. It's your business to take care of it, right? But then if the girl goes up there, she needs a table, she can't carry the table, they'll carry it for her. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to carry it for the guy, it's his business to go find somebody. You know what I'm saying? So if they act as women, they get more done. But that's not making themselves cheap. That's by chastity. Chastity is more powerful than sensuality. And they get things, everything gets done. Like that. So that's the point. The power, it works. You know, and it works. You know, the women in the body, they get everything done they need to get done. But they do it as women. They don't do it as men. Does that make sense? So that's the point. It's the balance that it does work. It functions. You know, women do control men. It's the way it is. Women are more powerful than men. It's the way it is. But if they don't control that fire, then that's a social disservice. You know what I'm saying? Fire is stronger than butter. So if the women don't control their own fire, then they're being very obnoxious. Because they do affect others. And if they don't care, they're extremely low class. Because they do have effect. In other words, the women control 90% of the world. But nowadays, the modern woman wants that other 10% also. The men think they're fighting over 50%, but they're so stupid, they're only fighting over 10%. Women already got the money. You know, that's the thing. But whatever, they're stupid. They continue to be stupid. Does that make sense? So the point is the etiquette has to be followed by everybody. Then everything works. The varnashram thing works. The spiritual thing works. The social things, business, anything works if one balances this and one understands what is the nature of it and functions accordingly. You get everything done. Everything gets done. Does that make sense? Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadeta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaina Daigo Guru ki.
You want to listen, if you listen. Well, it's quite difficult to find it right now.
Yeah.